We now convene the Tuesday, June 14, 2005, meeting for the House Special Committee on Budget Subcommittee on Human Services and Public Safety. Today we have two public hearings and possible work sessions. We'll begin with House Bill 3230, which is relating to the Oregon's Disabilities Commission. And we convene a public hearing on that bill. Is there, and turn time over to Ms. Manthe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. At your places, clip to the paper clip, you'll find a draft fiscal impact statement, proposed dash three amendments on House Bill 3230A, a copy of the bill, and a copy of the staff measure summary from the House Committee on Health and Human Services. The governor's revised budget for the Oregon Disabilities Commission includes two programs: operations, which includes advocacy and outreach activities, as well as commission support. The Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program, referred to as DHAP, which provides interpreter and real-time captioning services, coordination, training and education, technical assistance, and referrals. House Bill 3230A transfers DHAP to the Department of Human Services, renames the program Oregon Deaf and Hard of Hearing Services Program, and creates an advisory committee for the program. The dash three amendments adds the remaining program, or ODC operations, to the transfer to DHS. Approval of the dash three amendments will transfer ODC to the Department of Human Services, establish the Oregon Deaf and Hard of Hearing Services Program as a separate program.
Okay. We have had a chance to review this, and this has been something that has been carefully considered. And since this is, and we've also had during our last public meeting information given about this, nevertheless, is there anyone who feels compelled that they would like to address this issue before we go into a work session? Seeing none, then we will terminate this public hearing and now go into a work session on House Bill 3230. And the chair would accept a motion to accept the amendments.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Hansen has moved that the House proposed amendments to House Bill 3230 be made a part of House Bill 3230. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, the amendments are now accepted. And the chair will go ahead and make its own motion that House Bill 3230 be amended, or as amended, be reported out with due pass recommendation to the full committee. Is there any objection, or is there discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none, then that is carried, and I will carry this bill. And we will end the work session on House Bill 3230. Thank you very much.
Good work.
Quick. Yeah. You were awesome.
All right, we don't have enough.
My daughter's in the hospital. The hospital is in ICU. They find out what's wrong with her. This is so
serious. I need to.
There is maybe mono. It could be typhus. They don't know. And her phone died, and there's no.
All right, after this brief interlude, we're now ready to begin a public hearing on House Bill 2588 relating to chiropractic research project. First, we have our legislative fiscal analyst, Adrian Sexton, if you could give us an overview.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the subcommittee. You do have in front of you House Bill 2588 as engrossed by the House Health and Human Services Committee that sent it over to you. The bill does direct the development of a research project through the OHSU, Oregon Health and Science University, funded by workers' benefit fund monies that would come from the Department of Consumer and Business Services. Attached to your material, attached to a copy of the bill, is my preliminary staff measure summary on the engrossed measure, a copy of the measure, and the staff measure summary from the House Committee on Health and Human Services. We have received no amendments at the Legislative Fiscal Office. I'll just note a couple of other points. The fiscal impact on the Department of Consumer and Business Services related to provisions of the measure that would require an advisory committee has not yet been determined, and what LFO would suggest is that we, you receive information from the folks who are requesting this bill on what the expectations of work of the advisory committee would be, and that would help advise the Department of Consumer and Business Services on what the impact might be. Further, the budget for the Department of Consumer and Business Services for 2005-07 would not require adjustment if you approve this bill, because the expenditures from the Workers' Benefit Fund are non-limited. So there's no budget bill requirement. And LFO would also suggest that in order to understand the fiscal effect on DCBS, that you receive some clarification from the proponents on what the working relationship is expected to be between the DCBS director's authority to approve the project design and implementation as the bill provides, and any existing proposal for the project.
Okay. Say that one more time.
The measure, Mr. Chair, directs that the DCBS director has authority to approve project design and implementation.
Okay.
And so it would be helpful to gain an understanding of what that expectation is in connection with any proposal that may be currently under development.
Okay.
And how those relate to one another.
Right. We will be accepting testimony on this bill today. I'd like to begin with presentation by Vern Sable.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Vern Sabo, representing the Chiropractic Association of Oregon. House Bill 2588 calls for the first in the nation prospective randomized cost comparison study comparing the cost of chiropractic treatment versus medical treatment of Oregon injured workers, namely with things such as low back injuries, neck injuries, that sort of thing. We propose that Oregon Health Science University's Center for Health and Disability Policy will perform this study. The rationale for this study is that the current arbitrary restrictions on chiropractic services are actually costing the system money, not saving, while at the same time restricting injured workers from the scientifically proven most effective treatment for things such as low back injuries, and low back injuries being the single most expensive injury to the workers' comp systems internationally. It's been said that since 1990 and the sweeping work comp changes that Oregon businesses have saved some $10 billion. We applaud that. However, we would add the caveat that this had nothing to do with the arbitrary restrictions on chiropractic services. That, in fact, the savings would have been even more if, in fact, chiropractic services had been fully implemented during those 15 years. Why do I say that? In 1988, SAFE published this in-house statistical review of their own data. This is widely publicized in the lay literature, in the lay press, and it showed clearly that chiropractic case averages for treatment were right around $500 less than for medical treatment. Now, let me explain this slide. First of all, when an injured worker with, say, a low back injury comes to a medical physician, namely a family physician or internist, the current gatekeepers, it's important to understand that that family physician internist provides, by and large, no hands-on treatment of that injured worker. They do one of two things. They write a prescription for medications and or a prescription for a trial course of physical therapy, usually both. So 80% of the cost of medical care for things like low back injuries or for ancillary services, things that they order out that they do not perform themselves. Alternatively, In chiropractic practice, 80% of the cost of chiropractic services are for in-house services, things they perform hands-on. For example, the consultation exam for a medical physician was case average was about $250 per claim in 1988. However, the physical therapy they ordered out averaged about $550 alone. Chiropractic physicians perform their own in-house physical therapy, so that's incorporated in the $700. Also, prescription drugs ordered by the family physicians, the case average in 1988 was some $200, and chiropractic physicians pride themselves on not utilizing drugs. Radiologists, by and large, family physicians and internists have a board-certified radiologist read their films. That case average was $200 in 1988. Chiropractic physicians are trained to both take and read their own films. So when you add those columns up, medical treatment was some $1,200 versus $700 for chiropractic treatment, some $500 less. Time loss has also been shown, was also shown to be clearly less with chiropractic managed cases. This is a article published in 1991. It was a review of SafeZone data, 1985 data. This was published in a peer review Index Medicus journal. This is not personal anecdotes. This is a scientific rigor, a review of data. And what the researcher found was for light cases, the average time loss for chiropractic management was 9 days versus 11.5 days for medically managed cases. But also, chiropractic cases had a higher percentage of workers who had a week or less of time loss. And most compelling of all is this last figure, that in the chronic low back cases, with medically managed cases, the time loss averaged some 34.5 days versus only 9 days for chiropractic management. So prior to the sweeping changes in workers' comp, the treatment costs and time loss were both less when you looked across the entire board of chiropractic practice. Since the arbitrary restrictions in chiropractic, there's been a huge cost shifting, which we believe represents a tremendous waste of resources. For example, the bottom of the screen, chiropractic, the entire chiropractic profession, the first quarter of 2004, these are the most recent statistics in the Department of Consumer and Business Services, the entire profession received $1.6 million. And recall, 80% of that cost is for hands-on treatment. At the same time, medical physicians received $22.1 million. And recall, family physicians and internists, by and large, performed no hands-on treatment. The physical therapists that they prescribe to receive some $4.9 million alone in the first quarter of 2004, more than three times what my entire profession received, and we perform, like I say, our own in-house physical therapy. Secondly, drug prescriptions ordered by the family physicians and internists totaled some $4.1 million, and again, chiropractic physicians do not prescribe medications. Radiologists reading their films, $2.4 million. And hospital costs, $22 million. And by and large, chiropractic physicians do not have staff privileges, though that's changing. And a good little portion of that $22 million represents is relative to spinal surgeries, which we believe conservative chiropractic treatment can prevent 50 to 80% of those surgeries. So while medicine receives some $55 million, our entire profession received just $1.6 million. It has been said both by in-house lobbyist Chris Davey of Safe Corporation and John Schultz, Director of Workers' Comp Division, in prior testimony that, in fact, we should not only be concerned with cost effectiveness, but also clinical effectiveness. How effective is that treatment? Are we getting good outcomes? Just because a modality may be cheaper does not necessarily mean that it's better. We couldn't agree any stronger. incidentally, I'd like to, for the record, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, state that Mr. Chris Davey, the in-house lobbyist for Safe Corporation, and the interim president of Safe Corporation, Brenda Rockland, have been nothing but stellar to work with. They've been very accommodating with their time and expertise. Mr. Chris Davey in particular, in a stakeholders meeting we had a few weeks ago, had some very timely and excellent suggestions, most of which resulted in amendments to our bill, which I think strengthened the bill. Moving on. Indeed. Treatment efficacy is critical. Now, looking at just low back cases, there are now 73 high-quality clinical trials supporting the effectiveness of spinal manipulation more than any other known medical procedure for low back, and chiropractic physicians perform 95% of all spinal manipulation in this country, though it's not the only tool in our toolbox. Indeed, we'd say yes. In fact, are injured workers currently receiving the best available care? We would say maybe not. In the first quarter of 2002, the Department of Consumer Business Services, I'm sorry, I don't have 2004, the statistics are not out. These are specific procedures and their costs. While my entire profession received $1.4 million in 2002, the system spent some $2 million in that quarter on MRIs alone. Now, we would say that a goodly number of those were necessary, ordered willy-nilly in hopes of finding something. In that same period of time, some $2.4 million was spent on spinal surgeries, and we would say that a goodly portion of those were unnecessary and a portion unsuccessful. Independent medical exams, more was spent than in my entire profession, and there are the $1.8 million, and there are those who would say these are less than independent, less than unbiased, but that's a different story for a different day. Drug costs, $3.6 million, with the number one drug being 300 narcotics at $339,000 per quarter. So indeed, are injured workers currently receiving the best available care? We would say no. Potential cost savings with chiropractic implementation, that which we anticipate we would capture in the experimental group, is relative to back surgeries. Currently, there are 250,000 or more back surgeries performed in this country each year, and it has been cited that between 50 and 90% of those back surgeries are unnecessary. And there's a goodly percentage of back surgeries occurring within the work comp system. It's also been cited that 20 to 37% of those surgeries fail. Now, the direct cost of low back surgery has been shown to be between $35,000 and $65,000 in direct costs. That's hospitalization and surgical fees. But the indirect costs of failed back syndrome surgical cases are quite frankly astronomical. This is 10-year-old data, and I'm sorry I don't have something more recent. But in 1995, the direct costs of failed back syndrome cases, surgical cases, was estimated at $25 billion. Indirect costs, some $75 billion. It may interest the chair and members of the committee that Oregon leads the nation in back surgery. In fact, Bend, Oregon is the back surgery capital of the United States. In fact, more surgeries occur per capita in Bend than any other city in the United States. You might ask yourselves why. Well, the chiropractic profession would say it's not rocket science. It's because Bend is a very desirable place to live. Seems as though everyone wants to live there, including back surgeons, and they've got to make a living too. As my experience in 24 years as a board-certified chiropractic neurologist specializing in the conservative treatment of disc herniations, and the medical literature supports this to a degree, we believe we can save or prevent 50 to 80% of those back surgeries. Relative to that, there's a very compelling in-house statistical review of outcomes of some 75 lumbar fusion cases performed by Providence Work Comp NCO. Again, this is relative to our injured workers currently receiving the best available care. They reviewed 75 fusion cases between 1997 and 2000. 61% had not returned to any occupation 1 year after surgery. Let me repeat that. 61% were still totally disabled 1 year after surgery. 56% continued to need narcotics for pain control. 56% continued to say that their pain was the same or worse. 64% indicated they could do fewer activities since the surgery. 63% said they were disappointed with the surgery, and some 47% said if they could go back in time, they never would have had the surgery in the first place. But most compelling of all, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, is this last number. 25% had additional surgeries. That means more than one, two, in addition to the original surgery. So this group had three or more surgeries. That represents a tremendous cost in direct costs, as we saw a single surgery being between $35,000 and $65,000, but the indirect costs are astronomical, because clearly this group who had three or more surgeries, clearly there's a percentage of these individuals who are left with permanent total disability. Now, Mr. John Schultz, director of the Workers' Comp Division, told me that the unofficial number that they work off of, I believe for a 35 to 45-year-old with average earning capacity or one or two dependents, is right around $1.2 million cost to the system. That's one individual. That figure is arrived at by adding up all the medical costs, wage replacement costs, disability costs, and payment for permanent total disability. Three exciting studies that just came out last year. There have been a number of others prior to this, but these came out just last year that tend to validate our hypothesis that the current arbitrary restrictions on chiropractic services are costing the system a tremendous amount of money, not saving. First is this study out of Illinois. It is a prospective four-year study. This type of study had never been performed before in the realm of managed care. This is where policyholders could select a chiropractic physician as their primary care doctor or a medical physician as their primary care doctor, and they followed them forward in time 4 years and looked at the cost savings. Now, understanding that in the realm of managed care, it's my understanding that 3 to 5% savings is considered substantial. The following savings on this site with chiropractic management are, quite frankly, off the face of the planet. Savings like this have never been seen in the realm of managed care. With the chiropractic managed cases, there was a 43% reduction in hospitalizations, a 58.4% decrease in hospital days, a 43.2% decrease in outpatient surgeries and procedures such as MRIs, and 51.8% reduction in drug costs. Next, this study out of California, a four-year retrospective review of some 1.7 million member patients. 700,000 had chiropractic coverage. 1 million did not. And then they looked at the cost savings. In the chiropractic managed group, there was an overall 28% reduction in the treatment of back pain, a 41% reduction in hospitalizations, a 32% reduction in spinal surgeries. And we've just seen how expensive those can be. A 37% reduction in MRIs and x-rays with a 95% patient satisfaction rate. But, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, most compelling is the last statement, concluding statement by the authors, who believe that if every member patient, all 1.7 million, had chiropractic coverage, the plan could save as much as $47 million each year. Lastly, this study out of North Carolina, a retrospective review of some 19 years of data, some 43,000 claims, revealed the following statistics. Medical average treatment costs were $3,519 versus $663 per chiropractic. Average time lost days for medical management was 176 days versus only 33 days for chiropractic. Lastly, total average claim cost with medically managed cases was some $25,848 versus only $4,074 for chiropractic managed cases. In summary, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we're asking for a first-in-the-nation prospective randomized cost comparison study comparing the cost of chiropractic versus medically treated individuals with namely injuries such as low back, neck injuries. Again, the current this study has never been done before, to our knowledge, in the work comp arena in this country. Oregon will be the first in the nation, it's my understanding. Again, the current arbitrary restrictions on chiropractic is the rationale. We believe the arbitrary restrictions are costing the system money, not saving. Supporting this hypothesis is the fact that treatment costs and time loss were both shown to be less prior to the sweeping changes, and that the arbitrary restrictions since 1999 on chiropractic services has resulted in a huge cost shifting, which has facilitated, which we believe, a waste of tremendous resources. Understanding that lower back injuries internationally are the single most expensive work-related injury, and that chiropractic treatment, spinal manipulation, has been shown to be the most effective, and makes very little sense to restrict chiropractic services. To that end, Oregon leads the nation in spinal surgeries. A goodly portion of those are occurring within the workers' comp system. As I showed, the cost of failed back surgery cases are astronomical, and we believe that chiropractic treatment can prevent 50-80% of those. This represents a potential huge savings to the system. Validating that and our hypothesis again of the three studies I just cited, as per the cost-to-benefit ratio of our study, the cost of our study versus the probable benefit to injured workers, the cost of study is right around, and Dr. Wisdom can correct me on this, but right around $200,000 a year over five years, so about $1 million study. If we can save just one, in the experimental group, one injured worker from one unsuccessful back operation or operations, the study clearly pays for itself in monetary means, if not in human terms. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that completes my testimony. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Sabo. Questions? Representative Hansen.
Well, question I have. Currently, workers can have up to 12 visits with the chiropractor at the
correct.
Start.
Correct.
Why isn't that picking up more of the severe back injuries? Are we not seeing signs of improvement, or does the treatment regimen take considerably longer than 12 treatments? I'm kind of wondering why that portion is showing to be or would appear to be so inadequate.
Well, first of all, Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, members of the committee, I should have explained the arbitrary restrictions are 12 treatments in 30 days. Sorry, I didn't point that out. To answer your question, Representative Hansen, it depends on the nature of the injury, the type of condition, the diagnosis. For our quote-unquote lumbar sprain strain, 12 visits for the great majority of individuals is enough. But when you get to more problematic cases like lumbar instability or lumbar disc herniations, those, for instance, probable surgical cases, 12 visits in 30 days is not enough. And what's occurring is, to get more treatment, the chiropractic physician has to have a referral back from a medical physician, and many times that's where we lose the patient, many times to surgery. Within the MCOs, managed care organizations, it's always a medical director that also must pre-certify continued care as well. So that's where we lose them. It's the more difficult cases, and those are the very cases that cost the system the most.
Thank you.
Further question?
Mr. Chair, I'm one of those cases. I was in a bad car accident and ended up going to the chiropractor because some years later came back on me and I started literally losing my grip. And when I dropped somebody's antique coffee carafe, that did it for me. Because I didn't even feel it. I didn't even know I had it. So anyway, I went to the doctor at that point, and then they recommended surgery, which I had. And it took me a year to recover. But I don't take drugs, so I just did Tylenol over the counter. And I was okay. I wasn't doing heavy physical labor or anything like that. But I think the surgery, and that was in 1988, was about $10,000 to $12,000. So, and now I'm back to the chiropractor once a month. Except I've missed my month the last 2 months.
Well,
because of this, they don't usually work on Saturdays. Anyway, but I guess my point is when I was going to the chiropractor at the time, my coverage ended then, and it wasn't a workers' comp injury, so it was I had about 5 months worth of whatever my medical insurance at the time paid for. And then when it ended, so that's when I had to start over again. So I don't know now, of course it's time passed, but what would have happened had I continued on with the chiropractic. Maybe I could have avoided the surgery, I don't know.
Well, this study would allow there to be a determination over a 5-year period as to whether or not it can be shown, demonstrated that these benefits would apply to Oregon patients, as they apparently have applied in these other states. Now, these statistics are hard to argue with. Are there other comments or questions of Mr. Sabo? It's a fine presentation. Very clear, very pointed and concise, and it's hard to debate these kinds of numbers. And as you say, looking at what has happened in other states, if there is anything even close to the kinds of benefit with chiropractic care, then during the course of this study, regardless of what happens after the study, the savings to the system will be substantially greater than the cost of the study. And maybe it's time for us to have accurate, unbiased information that go beyond politics and turf. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there others who would like to comment on this? Yes, please.
My name is Jennifer Wisdom. I'm a research assistant professor in the Public Health and Preventive Medicine Department at Oregon Health and Science University. And I also direct the Center for Health and Disability Policy. I'm the proposed research director of the study. I do have a few words, if that's okay.
Okay, your name is Jennifer Wisdom?
Yes, Dr.
And
Wisdom.
You are over study and research?
Yes.
Tell you, that's, your name is fitting. We're ready
Thank
to...
Thank you. I'm a health services researcher at OHSU. I'm not a chiropractor, and this is my first involvement with Dr. Szabo's profession. I would like to make a correction to one of Dr. Szabo's slides. The first slide indicated there were two centers from OHSU that were involved with the study, and that's incorrect. The only center that's involved with the study is the one that I direct, which is the Center for Health and Disability Policy. So that's an error on his slide. Okay. There were a couple of questions that were brought up about the advisory committee and the working relationship with DCBS, and I'd like to address those. And I also have some written testimony prepared about the budget, if that's of interest to the committee. As far as the expectation of what the advisory...
Did you say you have written testimony for us? If we
I
could
do.
Have that now.
Sure.
Is the written testimony supplementary or your script?
It's supplementary,
okay,
Mr. Chair. In conversations in a number of meetings that we've had before now with Mr. Davies from SAFE and with other involved stakeholders, we've agreed that it would be best to have an advisory committee. There are a lot of people with a lot of interest in this study, in both how it's run and in what the outcomes are. And as a research director, it's my responsibility to ensure that the study is of the highest research integrity. Similarly, it's also my responsibility to ensure that we can all play together and make this work, and that we don't end up with people who are involved as stakeholders but who are not happy with how the study's run. Mm-hmm. So the purpose of the advisory committee is to ensure that the involved stakeholders have a say in how the study proceeds and how it is set up. Now, as I mentioned, the research integrity is my responsibility. However, there are a lot of research procedures, such as exactly how we get a sample of employers who are willing to participate, exactly how we manage data transfer with the carriers, how we organize the data. Those sorts of details are things that I think that the involved stakeholders, including the insurance carriers, members of the MLAC committee, and others may be interested in and could certainly strengthen the study with their input. So that's the purpose and the reason for the advisory committee. It also was brought up that since it is a five-year study and since we do have a lot of tasks to do before we actually even enroll the first participants in the study, it's a good idea to have a point where we have everything, all of our ducks in a row, so to speak, and then the DCBS director can indicate that the rest of the financing can be released and that we can proceed with the study. So that was written into one of the amendments that I believe you have, and that was asked about this morning as to how the DCBS director is involved with this. Basically, the advisory committee will assist me. I will put together the entire proposal, have all the procedures documented out, and give that to the DCBS director, who will then make a decision as to proceeding with the actual conduct of the study.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Good questions from Ms. Wilson. Very clear. You're looking forward to this, aren't you?
Sorry?
I see you're looking forward to this, aren't you?
I am. It really is a fascinating health services research question about how you can increase access and potentially reduce costs at the same time.
You know, and also, a lot of research goes in a journal somewhere, and it's just buried. But the truth is, regardless of the outcome, this is going to have national significance.
Absolutely.
There will be a lot of people interested in what this actually shows.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there others who would like to testify on this? Mr. Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, J.L. Wilson, representing the Management Labor Advisory Committee, which I co-chair. The Management Labor Advisory Committee did take a position in opposition to House Bill 2588, and I'll tell you why. As it pertains to the study of workers' comp practitioners in the comp system, I don't refute anything Dr. Szabo said. He made an excellent presentation, but I would say that the restrictions are not arbitrary. In fact, chiropractors as well as a number of other providers were excluded from the workers' comp system for what I would say very well-publicized fraud and the kind of behavior that warranted excluding them from the system that was, in fact, costing the system a lot of money. Now, I recognize that was 15 years ago, and today's a different day. But we do approach this issue cautiously even today as it pertains to including other alternative providers in the workers' comp system. This session alone, in addition to the chiropractors seeking additional inclusion in the system, we saw bills from the physician's assistants, naturopaths, and the podiatrists, who all wanted attending physician status. And what we did in the Workers' Comp Management Labor Advisory Committee is to say, we don't believe that there should be a patchwork of studies to study individual groups, as in the case of House Bill 2588, where you're allotting $1 million to study one particular group. We think there should be a more comprehensive study of all the groups, which is why I wouldn't oppose 2588 without proposing an alternative, which is Senate Bill 669. And 669, instead of a five-year study at $1 million, is a two-year study at $300,000 done by the department, which includes the physician's assistants, the naturopaths, and the chiropractors. And all the groups that were excluded in the 1990 reforms, it is a comprehensive look at the feasibility of including all of them in the system. What's untenable for us is part of House Bill 2588 in terms of kind of being a gatekeeper on taking a look at who should be in the system and who should not. The chiropractors are asking for a five-year study at $1 million. Are we then going to grant podiatrists a five-year study for $1 million, and then are we going to grant the physician's assistants to study for 5 years and $1 million in every subsequent group that wants attending physician status? It seems to me that we could do it less expensively in one shot through a vehicle like 669 to ask the department to give a two-year study on the feasibility of including these groups. I would have you know, at least from an employer perspective, there is no hue and cry from the employer community to grant expanded attending physician status. This bill did not emanate from the employer community, nor did it emanate from the labor community. Obviously, the chiropractors have a vested interest in that, and I appreciate that. But it did not come from the people who are actually served by the comp system, who pay the premiums, and who actually get treated. And that's our take on this particular bill.
Okay, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wilson, when MLAC was discussing this, what was the actual vote? I heard it was a sort of a split decision.
Oh, you'd be thank you, Chair Richardson and Representative Hansen. It was a split decision. It did not have the majority of both sides. In other words, a majority of both the business and labor opposed it, I believe. But there was some support, but there was more opposition, obviously.
Well, what I'd heard was that it wasn't a full board. There were some people that were missing, and it wasn't unanimous in terms of both labor and management, but there was a relatively small attendance of the management people there.
Thank you, Chair Richardson and Representative Hansen. To my knowledge, I remember we had that meeting over in the Veterans Building. I'm not saying we had the full complement of folks, but our committee is comprised of five and five, and it has to have three votes on either side. And I believe there were three votes or four votes in opposition on the management side, and two or three in opposition on the labor side. I don't quite remember, but I mean, it clearly did not get a majority of votes.
I would sure appreciate if in your record you could maybe get the committee the full vote total.
Sure.
Thank you.
Representative Hammond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wilson, you mentioned the other groups, i.e. podiatrists and physician's assistants and others. In the work that's been done up to this point, what evidence did those folks bring that showed, did they bring evidence that to you that showed the potential cost savings that we've seen from the chiropractic group? I mean, if you did the math on these kind of medical health savings, it'd be substantial. What evidence did those folks bring?
Thank you. Chair Richardson, Representative Hannah, every group came to us with their own load of studies and statistics that show cost savings. I mean, that is the number one That is the number one, you know, kind of foot in the door, is everybody say, we can save you money, and this is how. And I will say that the chiropractors, in terms of providing just the volume of statistics in an organized fashion, were clearly provided the most. There's no question. But, you know, given the number one, you know, sales pitch is we can save you money, and this is how. And most often that's accompanied by studies from other states or cost comparisons for procedures across the board. We can treat for this while docs can treat for this and see the cost savings. And Dr. Saber was right. You know, cost savings are a component of this, but there's a quality of care component that also needs to be, it can't be overlooked. And, you know, that's the main concern of labor, is the quality of care. You know, and most often they're the folks that kind of raise the red flags on the quality of care issues with the alternative providers.
Further questions? Thank you very much.
Sure.
Are there any other folks who haven't spoken yet who would like to? Is there anyone else who would like to speak? Mr. Sabo? Dr. Sabo?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd like to respond to J.L. Wilson's comments. First of all, the fraud cases he alluded to, there were six out of roughly 1,200 chiropractic physicians statewide. There were six individuals that were either pleaded no contest or were found guilty of fraud. To paint the entire profession with that same brush is, in our opinion, inappropriate.
I was an attorney back then, and there was fraud on the part of SAFE that came out as far as the statistics. It didn't show up until after the legislation, which was an interesting aspect that doesn't normally get brought up either.
There was quite a bit of subsequent to that misinformation regarding my profession. The culmination of the Mahoney Hall Group, the chiropractic profession was not invited, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand that the Oregon Medical Association representatives were invited or were involved at some point. as far as Senate Bill 669, the other provider groups, once their original bills got shot down by MLAC, they wanted an expansion of treatment parameters. They saw that there was some interest in our study, so they basically springboard off our study. Now, the problem with 669 is that it's a kind of a what-if study. It will not be anything close to what we're proposing. Quite frankly, it's a looking at existing data here in the state of Oregon and other areas and saying, well, what if these various provider groups had attending physician status? What do you suppose might happen? And then they're to report back to the 2007 legislative session. This type of study doesn't match what we're suggesting. Clearly with our study, what we will be capturing is also all the costs, medical costs of treatment versus ours. I believe that Senate Bill 669 would miss the mark. They would not be able to capture those types of savings.
Okay. Yeah, is there anything specifically that you'd like to add relating to 2588?
No, that's this is the end of my comments, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. And my comment about SAFE, which was kind of flippant, what I meant to say, to be specific, was that the numbers upon which the whole reforms were based in that session, we were given numbers that indicated the SAFE was in a huge financial difficulty. My recollection, although it's been 15 years ago, was that after that was done, we found out that those numbers were not correct and that there was substantially more money available than there had been reported to the legislature at the time. And it was so significant that if needed, I'm sure that I could go back and get that information. So whether that was intentional or merely a mathematical error, it didn't change the outcome of those huge reforms, which over time have been shown in many instances to have been very productive. Thank you very much. Okay. Is there any other comment on House Bill 2588?
Good Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Lisa Trussell with AOI. And AOI's position on all workers' comp legislation has been consistent since 1990 in that we support the recommendations of the Management Labor Advisory Committee because we understand how the workers' comp system can become a mess fairly quickly if it's politicized too much. So we've been very happy with the reforms and support the recommendation. But I did want to mention the Mahoney Hall incident came up with Dr. Sabo's testimony. And I think that there's only two of us remaining in the building that were at Mahoney Hall. One of them is myself, and the other one is the current co-chair of the Management Labor Advisory Committee on the labor side, Bob Shiprack. And there was references about who's in and who's out of the meetings at Mahoney Hall. There were no providers in the meetings. There were 14 of us, 7 representing management, 7 representing labor. We were staffed with DCBS employees. Matt Hennessy was the director at the time. He's now a SAFE board member. He was in the meetings up until his car accident. Governor Kulongowski was the insurance commissioner. He came in occasionally. And the governor at that time was Neil Goldschmidt, and he came in occasionally when we were kind of locked on movement on issues. But the providers weren't there. And at the time of the 1990 reforms, I ran a large, not a large, I shouldn't say large, I ran a self-insured, self-administered workers' comp program. And my experience running that program was similar to some, many of my colleagues in the self-insured arena, where our highest cost was chiropractic care, and we didn't see savings in time loss. The time loss was higher on a chiropractic case than otherwise might be. So I just wanted to point out those things. I think that the idea of looking at all of the providers together is an idea that has merit to see, you know, 15 years later, should we do some adjustments? Thank you.
I have a question for you. Was the slide then inaccurate that was talking about the total costs, including ancillary care?
It was
a 1988 SAFE study that indicated that if you added in physical therapy, drugs, and radiologists, which were referred by the MD, that the costs were greater?
Well, Mr. Chair, I can't speak to what SAFE's costs were. What my experience was that at the time on the program I ran, chiropractic was the single most expensive on the one that I ran.
Right.
And I think that probably if I had totaled up everything that was medical related, I'd probably have had a different answer.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, we will close the public meeting on House Bill 2588 and open a work session on House Bill 2588. Representative Wisnett.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Ms. Sexton, give us a summary of what the committee discussion about Senate Bill 669 was.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, I can't because I don't have the bill in front of me. If you'd like to recess for a moment, I can go back to our office and retrieve that file and see what the discussions may have been.
Ms. Chair, follow up.
Hold on.
Ms. Sexton, because my question is, the committee voted this out unanimously, and it doesn't show that they discussed Senate Bill 669. So, they did discuss it. Is that correct or not?
Mr. Chair, I do not know what the discussion from the House Health and Human Services Committee might have been on 669 in relation to this bill.
I might be able to help that. I've read the bill and have reviewed it, and it is a separate issue. The merits of House Bill 2588 are a standalone bill, and if there was to be a hearing on Senate Bill 669, which the co-chairs could actually discuss if that was going to happen, and certainly the chair of the House Budget Committee, then we would schedule that. But it is not exclusive of this, nor is it intended that it would replace this.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah. Where's your hand?
The summary report does say, under issues discussed, the other legislative proposals addressing the workers' compensation system. It doesn't specifically list that bill.
And I was on the committee, and I don't recall specifically, but that doesn't mean it didn't happen, that remembering a particular bill through a lot of different things.
Well, a five-year blind study is different than $300,000 for a two-year bulk study. And as has been presented, there's no question that the study that's being proposed by OHSU, I mean, that would be conducted by them, is to provide a long-term detailed review of chiropractic care, not merely whether or not those specialties that have not had attending physician status should be granted that. It's a different goal. And so that's why these bills are being viewed separately. Further discussion? Representative Wisnett?
Yes, sir.
Do you want to make the motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee approve House Bill 2588.
Okay, first we need to deal with the amendments.
Mr. Chair, there are no amendments. The memo that I had included simply was asking for a discussion on the record of to clarify the responsibilities and roles, but that no statutory change or changes to the bill are necessary, as long as we understand what those are.
Okay, Representative, wasn't it has moved 2588 to full committee with a due pass recommendation? Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Is there discussion on that motion? Representative Henson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly support the motion. One of the things that dawned on me when I became aware in the four sessions I've been here, when you ask the legislature to start delving into the best medical practices, we're not really equipped to do that. And we have scope of practice issues that come forward to us, and I've always struggled with those, just from the standpoint that it's difficult for a legislator to determine, to have to make a case of what is the best scope of practice type issues. This could be an incredible aid in terms of us being able to do that. It puts some real science, some very strong science behind decisions that may have to be made in the future, and I think this is the way we should be dealing with these types of issues. The only part of this whole bill that bothers me at all is I do believe in the MLAC process. I'm a strong supporter of the reforms that came out of Mahoney Hall. In this case, because of the incredible savings that this could potentially show us, and it also may, it's not just a case of determining what's the cheapest way to treat lower back injuries. It also probably shows it will be very useful in determining how the chiropractic
outcomes
fit in all of the injured workers' claims. The other one is it may very well show a real pathway for our managed care systems. And again, one of the biggest issues facing this legislature is the overall cost of medical care. And if this is helpful in that arena, it's certainly money well spent. So I can easily support this bill, and I would really hope that MLAC would revisit the issue so we don't end up in a more of a jurisdictional dispute over who has the real authority and who should be naming whether the study is made, as much as it's all coming together to show that this is something that could have potential significant savings for the people of Oregon.
I agree. It's certainly a different bill, then. Please put us back on the list. Show favoritism to us. It's just basically saying, you know, let's see what the facts are. I respect that as well. Further discussion?
And I wholeheartedly agree. I think that
this is the kind of thing that we should be moving toward. If there's a chance to save money and get good quality treatment and also increase choices for people, some people would choose not to have surgery and would benefit by chiropractic treatment, maybe acupuncture, whatever. But since if we can use science and say, yeah, this is a good use of the money and it will do the same thing or do as good as or better than and cost less, why not?
Okay.
An ounce of prevention.
Is there objection to moving this bill 2588? Is there objection to the motion? Hearing none, then it is unanimously carried, and I will be the carrier on the bill. Are there other... So, and with that, we will terminate the work session on House Bill 2588. Is there other discussion or matters for our committee today? Hearing none, we stand adjourned. Thank you.